When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome to another episode of Strictly Business, the podcast in which we speak with some of the brightest minds working in the media business today. I'm Andrew Wallenstein with Variety. When the new animated series Space Junk premieres later this month, you won't be able to see it on a TV network or a streaming service. This show is powered by the blockchain, a new style of programming that counts my next guests as pioneers in this relatively new corner of the entertainment space. John Atanasio and Luisa Wong are the co-founders of the Web3 story studio Toonstar. And if you want to know what on earth a Web3 story studio is, stick around.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. Oracle.com/strategic.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And we are back with John Atanasio and Lisa Wong, co-founders of Toonstar. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Cool. So I want to start by noting that, you know, sometimes when we hear about these new ventures doing something super cutting edge, people make assumptions like, oh, these, you know, Johnny come latelys to Hollywood are trying to, but you both have quite the resume, having worked on major franchises at various top studios like Warner Brothers, Disney, DreamWorks. So how did we get here? How did you get to this kind of cutting edge stuff?
You know, the way we got here is that we met at Warner Brothers, and we were in the digital media group there, and we were doing a lot of work really at the intersection of like technology and how tech was like impacting storytelling. And we, you know, we saw, and this will sort of like, you know, rewind back to like early days of Web 2, and we saw what was like, we're actually on the team that we were talking about the benefits of like YouTube and sort of this new like world and ecosystem where you know, creators could directly connect with communities and tell stories. And so, you know, that really opened our eyes to like, you know, this idea of that storytelling and the way, you know, creators and fans connect was changing. And I think the other thing that we noticed was that when we looked at the world of animation, it still really felt like this, a bit of like a private club.
How so?
I mean, in the sense of it felt like it was the same people, whether it was like writers, showrunners, you know, voice talent. And we didn't see enough, you know, new storytellers, whether it was like, you know, new ideas, new concept, or just diversity of storytellers. And that was always weird to us, because like, you know, we were just like, you know, we call ourselves children of Saturday morning cartoons. We just love the medium of animation. We know how powerful it is in terms of being a story, you know, telling medium, but also how powerful it is in terms of building, you know, franchise IP. And it was weird to us that more people didn't have access to the medium. And so I think you kind of combine those two things of like what was happening, you know, in sort of Web 2 with this idea of like, you know, sort of unlocking animation for a new breed of storytellers. And that really was the inspiration for starting Toonstar. And that was, you know, we got the enough, you know, courage to leave the corporate nest and start the company. And at the highest level, like that's our mission, is to build, you know, original entertainment IP. Using, you know, we started out in Web 2, now we're using Web 3, using new forms of technology to do it and really unlock, you know, unlock animation for a new, you know, new generation of storytellers.
Well, I know it takes courage, but it also takes investment. And so, Luisa, how are you guys able to get some pretty big investors to come in and bankroll this?
Yeah. We have some, you know, pretty notable investors. Our lead investor, Founders Fund. We also have Snapchat as an investor, Greg Croft, and Baron Davis, yeah. Also one of our investors. And, you know, like we really, among others, And I think we really, you know, it really took like building these like proof of concept cases to be able to like go out and demonstrate and show that, you know, this is a category of like, you know, how do you build this like tech stack to be able to produce things in animation very quickly and be able to, you know, distribute that out into the marketplace. And at this time, at that time in which we were raising, you know, it was very Web 2 centric world. And so we basically built, we self-funded the kickstart to building the tech stack to then show that we had the technology to be able to do this like quick turn animation. And we ended up distributing all of these like little vignettes in Instagram, in Facebook. And And I think that's kind of like where it really, really started to, you know, kind of demonstrate that, wow, there's an appetite for original animated content shorts in social media. And then at the time too, there was Musical.ly, right? The pre-TikTok to the world Musical.ly. And we actually built as part of our tech stack this like live streaming, animated live streaming technology. And we had this blue chicken named Poppy, who ended up being this, you know, very big muser, as they call him. And we had a live show on Musical.ly that was getting, you know, over 100,000 concurrent viewers, you know, on the show at the time. And that was huge. And I think that really kind of like moved us into, you know, like a lot of notice. And that's really kind of where we had our first round of investment.
Yeah, that was like the moment where venture, you know, that really took us, you know, started the venture path. And it was that, you know, OG, her name, Poppy. Yeah. So her name was Poppy, and she was, you know, she was one of the first, animated influencers in social media, and just, she took off. And I think that really helped, it helped validate our thesis of, you know, hey, there is, you know, you can build these characters direct with communities, in, you know, using technology and sort of new forms of storytelling. And then I think to see the kind of audiences we were getting, you know, not only loving the character, but interacting with the character in different ways. And again, at that point, it was primarily through social media. I think that really was a point where everyone's like, yeah, there's something there.
So now that we've got the background down, let's fast forward to today, where, you know, later this month, your third Web3 series is coming out in form of Space Junk. Yeah. So how did you get from this sort of social media driven model to what you're doing now, which sounds pretty different?
Yeah, no, I mean, so it's like, I think for us, like the way we talk about it is that there were things that we learned and I think, you know, capabilities and, you know, expertise, competencies that we honed in the Web2 world that are, you know, very applicable to Web3. I think, you know, probably even more so potentially in Web3 than they were in Web2 and social media. And I think, you know, what happened is like, you know, we built this, you know, this production engine that, you know, can do high quality animation very quickly. We have, you know, a lot of, you know, we have had a lot of reps, building communities directly and large, you know, these are large communities in on social media, and they're highly engaged communities. And so we had that, you know, that part of the expertise. And then I think, you know, enter Web3, and, you know, we'll give a lot of, you know, credit to Mila Kunis and her team, because we saw, you know, what they did with Stoner Cats. So Stoner Cats, that was the first animated series in Web3. Mm-hmm. We were the, you know, so, and basically we came along, partnered with Mila and her team, and we were part of their second animated series. And we, you know, we added first, like we were the Gimmicks is the first community driven animated series in Web3, which is a little bit different than Stoner Cats. But we just saw what they were doing with that project, and we're like, wow, this is like, you know, such a great idea in terms of like this new way to get fans involved in helping, you know, being part of IP, but also this new sort of form of distribution where you can, as a creator, have more control over your story, over your IP. You have ownership over that. And to us, that was like, you know, that was very much aligned with sort of our DNA and our thesis when we launched the company. And again, when we launched, Web3 didn't exist, but we saw, you know, and again, this is rewind. This is 2 years ago that we connected with them. And so we're like, oh, this is great. We pitched Mila, and thankfully, you know, she and her team came on board as, you know, co-producers for the project. And that's really, you know, how our journey in Web3 started. But I think sort of beneath all that was just this idea of like, yeah, these things that we've built are a great fit for Web3. And in fact, I think they position us, you know, they're even, you know, they even position our company to do, I would say, sort of next level type IP building that we couldn't, you know, that we couldn't do in Web 2. And so I think that was probably it, where it's like, yes, this is a thing where it's just a great fit for what we've built. And then we built, you know, over the last 2 years, built very deep Web3 tech dev capabilities. So those are things around building protocols on blockchains. And, you know, we built a social layer for the Gimmick, which was, you know, we've been told was the first social layer in Web3. And those are all sort of like tech dev capabilities that we've spent, you know, the last two years building out.
Okay, so now let's pump the brakes for a second and give the most explain it to my audience, like they're six, explanation of what we even mean here in terms of, you know, a Web3 powered piece of entertainment. I know you've got the community layer and all that, but I'm 6 years old, Louisa. Explain to me how, you know, I'm assuming Space Junk isn't as simple as, oh, I watch it on streaming service X or TV network Y. Mm-hmm. So starting with, where do I access this show and what are the things that make this different than what I might see on a linear network?
Sure. So in order to access the show, you simply go to the website spacejunkies.xyz. And when you're there, there's actually a button that says episodes, and you click on that and you'll be able to watch it. It's not gated. So our projects are not gated. So you do not actually need to own a token in order to simply enjoy the show. So you would be able to enjoy the show just like you would be able to on television. You just go to the website.
I don't pay. I don't have. Do I watch ads?
Nope.
Okay.
It's there. So right, just yeah. So that experience, I think, will feel very familiar. You just go to that website and you'll be able to watch the episodes. And so that's, you know, very simple. So the next step is, if you're like, hey, I love this show, now I'm interested in exploring, like, so what does it mean to become part of the community? So when you think about, you know, again, the reference point of like how people usually consume their shows, they're like, oh, my God, I love Harry Potter, not a show, but a movie, but okay. Mm-hmm. So I love Harry Potter and I'm such a fan. Now, you know, as a fan, I start to seek out other experiences in that, you know, in that particular, you know, IP. And so that's, you know, that's what we've built into that website is come watch the show. You love the show, you enjoy it. Well, okay, there are other experiences. Now, go deeper. And the going deeper will be, we invite you to come create with us. Like what we know to be the case in these, a lot of these shows or like franchises is that people love to be able to, you know, come in and you see like fan fiction being created. Well, and that's usually kind of like this like secondary layer that everyone kind of does on the side, or maybe they'll like, you know, go to other like apps or community boards and they'll just kind of do it on their own. Well, in this case, we've built that right into the actual experience. It's like, if you love it, come grab a token, come into the behind the scenes type of like experience layer. And now what do you get access to? You get access to a lot of, you know, discussions from creators and the people who voice it, you know, it, like the get to see like the making of. And you also have the ability to create your own stories, create your own backstories to the token that you hold, because each token has, you know, basically a unique set of attributes that, you know, invite you to now create a story with it.
But also monetization is coming in here. You are purchasing the NFT.
Yes, you're purchasing the NFT. And that almost like it's your pass to have all of these other activities, right? So you're able to create. And for that, you also have the ability to jump into things like weekly activities that some of them are contests, to be able to have your stories like voted on in the winners of that, you know, contest will be able to have their stories or their characters invited into the main show, and that they'll be able to voice a character in the show and be a part of an episode and get IMDb credit in a production that, you know, stars John Heder, that stars Tony Cavallaro. Like, that's a pretty cool entry point into an industry where it's pretty difficult to break in, and to just simply have like your name listed as part of the production in this, you know, in this real, you know, show.
Now, is this the kind of thing, because, you know, obviously you're not alone out there, although not too crowded a space either in terms of people doing this kind of thing. But from what I've read and seen, sometimes this model has to do with you, the viewer who has bought an NFT, you now have an ownership stake in this show. And is that this kind of model?
No, actually. So it's not an ownership stake in the show. So we're not, we don't position this as you're not becoming an investor in the show. The show is fully funded. It's being produced. It's, you know, it, the show's existence does not depend on the NFT holders to come in so that we pool enough resources in order to make the show. This is really more like, this is really like becoming this like VIP fan base that has all sorts of these like, you know, really great perks in it, right? So it's like joining the Soho House, right? Mm-hmm. There's some great perks of like, you get access to this really great environment. You know, there's some concerts that are attached to it. You get to, so it's really like that. It's like this, if you love the show, will come and be kind of like this next layer of a fan, a supporter, and you own this token. And for this token, you really get to go deeper into the creation process, being a part of the show. There are, you know, like benefits of maybe being able to, you know, see things that maybe normally you would see at like a Comic-Con panel, like that sort of like more direct interaction with creators, really, and an outsized sort of even being able to vote on where the story goes. These are all ways in which, you know, like that, you know, the fandom, the VIP fandom sort of like interacts.
So the bottom line is you are basically getting this greater level of engagement than you would ordinarily.
Yes.
When we come back, we will talk a bit more about how this model works. We'll be back with John Attanasio and Lisa Wang.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
We are back with the co-founders of the Web3 story studio, Toonstar, digging into an interesting business model. John, so now that I know that I is the viewer, the fan, am not an owner, I'm curious, from the Toonstar perspective, are you the owner? Are you the creator? How do you make money?
So Toonstar, we are the owner along with, you know, whoever it, you know, is participating in the project. So, you know, in the case of Space Junk, it's, you know, we own it along with, John Heater and Tony Cavallaro and Dominic Russo, who's the creator of the world.
He did Workaholics.
Yeah.
Right?
So he created Workaholics. And so he he's the creator of Space Junk. The people that are, you know, owners in that IP, or have, you know, a stake in that IP, that's how we've structured it. Now there is this other sort of aspect to it where, too abstract of a concept, but we like this notion of like, we talk a lot about like this idea of like nature versus nurture. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of this idea with like, you know, these tokens or NFTs, where it's like, there's like a rare, you know, you get this thing and it's like rare and it's like, how rare is it? And that determines its value. And that's okay. And that's a fine sort of like, you know, concept.
That's how most people understand the NFT market.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Exactly. That's how most people think about it. But, you know, and that's fine. And like, you know, when we do stuff, there's inherent rare, you know, at least in the gimmicks, the way we did it, there was inherent rarity in, you know, some of the, you know, the NFTs had like a, you know, different types of rarity. But there's this other aspect that we really like in it, and it's really like the nurture part of it. And the idea there is like, you know, allow the community through your effort, through your creativity, through participation, you actually can become part of the world. And that's through something that you've done. So it's not a lot, like that's not a lottery ticket. That's actually, you know, work and creativity that you've contributed to the community. And we like that idea, and that's what we did with the gimmicks. That's the same thing we're doing with Space Junk, where it's like you have that token, you can actually work your way in to the main canon. Because if you write a backstory or you create fan fiction that the entire community loves enough to vote you as like the coolest thing, then we'll actually bring that into the core canon of the world. And now all of a sudden, you do have a piece of you know what's being created. So it's basically we've created this opportunity for the community to earn their way in, mm-hmm. to sort of the core canon, and we just love that concept because it is like, you know, it's not just, again, it's like it's through people's sort of effort and merit, and it's also through like these really cool and different ways to participate, which we just think, you know, we just feel like audiences today, behaviors changed, and there's an expectation to engage more with content and stories and participate in different ways. And that's certainly, you know, prevalent in younger generations, but I think that's also, you know, older generations have sort of learned that too, a lot through sort of like have been trained through social media. But we see that as a trend. And I think for us, it's like, all right, how do we sort of lean into that and give the community those kind of, you know, those kind of opportunities?
So I get what you're saying in theory, but going back to the economics of what you're doing, I wonder, when you're hatching brand new IP and you're doing it at a place that is not a destination, like a streaming service, how are you able to get enough people in the tent to experience all this, mm-hmm. to make this profitable?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So a couple things. I think, you know, where we have, so our tech stack does enable us to create and produce at a much lower cost basis. So, so that in and of itself, just from an economic standpoint, puts us in a little bit of a different category in terms of we're not looking at an episode costing millions of dollars, right? So that's definitely, you know, that benefit, and so that's really kind of like, I guess, you know, like our are sort of like how we're able to make it work, where you don't need to have millions of eyeballs on a piece of content. It's just simply, you know, it's as simple as that. It does not cost us as much as you would in the traditional sort of like model. And so, and then yes, you have, you know, the NFT paying members of the NFT base that are, you know, going to be, you know, buying into it and contributing to that. So that, you know, obviously then becomes a revenue model. Then the other side of it is that, you know, creating that sort of like community, there are, you know, now you have like a very avid fan base in which brands become interested in being able to come and be, you know, sponsors of like, say, specific shows or like, you know, having product placement in there. So the economic model isn't significantly different in terms of like, hey, there are these advertising models. Now it looks a little different in Web3 because you have a smaller base, but avid fan base that also has direct reach. And because of the lower cost structure, now you're able to really kind of shape and look at like the economic model of how you make this work isn't all of a sudden this like huge behemoth that has a lot of sunk cost structures that will then, you know, sort of say that that was kind of the big hurdle in animation in the past. It's like to greenlight anything, you sort of have to work through that, you know, Excel spreadsheet and say, all right, I got to make sure to hit X in order to even clear that profitability threshold to say, yes, I'm going to do this, you know, episode or do this series. That's, you know, changed for us significantly because of the tech stack that we've built and because of now you have these different ways in which you have monetization where you can, you know, you have merch that you have avid fan base that has much higher conversion, right? So you have conversion when you look at the broad base of like, you know, the TV sort of like shows, well, you have millions of eyeballs and maybe you're converting 1% to buying a t-shirt. That looks significantly different when you're talking about a web-based NFT enhanced project because these guys are such huge fans. Like you're basically going for, do you have a million casual fans or do you have, you know, 10,000 rabid fans? And that's kind of the dynamic that we're now looking at and really kind of reshaping how we think about fandom, how we think about economic models of these, like, you almost become like these like pockets of like smaller businesses that are built around these like IPs that have the potential of even of scaling, but smaller is still sustainable.
And how do you sell, John, someone, you know, like someone, a creative from Workaholics to join you on this? What's the incentive there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, so I think, you know, part of it is, you know, there are sort of like trends in Hollywood right now that I think make it, you know, honestly make it easier. One is that, you know, it's, you know, and you can see, especially what's, you know, sort of happening now. There are a lot of productions that, you know, are getting, you know, canceled, halted, things, you know, will sit in development for extended periods of time. It's just getting harder and harder to get something made in the traditional system. I think another part of it is, you know, there's a control and ownership aspect to it as well, because if, you know, say you are able to, you know, sort of get something, at least maybe in a development, a lot of times you might lose creative control. You know, the ownership that, you know, the real ownership that you have in what you created, you know, might not really be commensurate for, you know, what you probably should get for creating, you know, a hit concept. And so I think those trends are, you know, now you've got storytellers and creators that are, you know, honestly challenged, frustrated, and they're looking for other ways to get stories made, get their stories told, have the control, have ownership. And honestly, I think it's a pretty, you know, I don't know, but we're obviously, but we're, you know, we're biased, but I think it's a fairly easy, you know, sort of like pitch, because it's like, listen, we're, you know, here's a way to go do this. And then the other part of it, I think, you know, if you talk to people that have worked with us, they, you know, I think one of the things that we're proud of is that, like, they'll say, hey, like, stuff happens, stuff gets made. And I think that's probably one of the themes. If you, you know, if you were to talk to, you know, all the creatives that we've worked with, it's like, yeah, they, stuff's happening, stuff's getting made. And like, you think about that, and it's such, such a basic concept. But that's how things should happen. Like, things should get made. Things should, you know, progress, because that's the business, you know, that we're in.
But let's also, let's not forget, we're sitting here having this conversation during the first week of the writer's strike.
Right.
Frustration is probably at a maximum. And I'm this is not a joking question. Does that create a market circumstance that helps you guys because people are going to be looking for opportunities, or are you hemmed in by the strike somehow? Or,
I mean, I think, you know, it's, we're, I think that, you know, for us, we've always sort of, you know, been the place where we're like, if creators like want to create and they want to, you know, make stuff, like we're the place to come and be like, you have an animated idea, like come and talk to us, because, you know, we're going to be producing and we're going to be moving things forward. Because I think that, you know, you talk about the frustration that happens, and, you know, like the strike is obviously a very serious matter, and it, you know, has a lot of implications. And I think, like, if you talk to Dom, one of the things that, you know, like, he's, you know, he's said to us, like, you know, more than a few times, is like, it's unbelievable. You come into this industry as a writer, and you hear stories, like, he tells the stories, and, you know, like, other folks that we've worked with have told the stories, like, the thing that is that you never expect, that you're very quickly, like, surprised by, is that you spend a lot of your career waiting. You're waiting for your years, you know, your years for your series to, you know, come out of development, in which you're just, you know, kind of like long stretches of times of like, oh, we're going to meet and we're going to talk about, like, maybe making the show. And then we're going to pause and wait again. And, you know, there's like just more consideration. And so you spend so much time just waiting to see if something's going to happen. And so, you know, for us, we're like, writer strike or no writer strike, who we are as a company is like, we're not sitting and waiting, because our inherent DNA, and I guess this is the benefit of being really, you know, our DNA is like, we're tech and creative, but we are still a tech company. And as a tech company, the thing that you don't get with a tech company is like, you can't, as a tech company, sit and wait. It's like, you have to build stuff. You have to put it out there. And, you know, this, you know, very tech centric thing is like, you got to iterate, right? You got to put it out and you're going to iterate and you're going to make the next version. You're going to make the next version of the product. And that's really part of the tech DNA that we have that's moved into our creative process, in our creative collaborations, is that you can't wait to make stuff. And that's really kind of like, for us, with or without the writer's strike, at the end of the day, it's like, if you're a creator who you see, like, speed is important to you and you want to put your product out there and you want your stories to be made and stories to be told, like, you should be having a meeting with us.
I'm curious to get your sense of the NFT marketplace right now, particular to it being also a place for entertainment. Feels like, you know, we've in the past 12 months gone on quite a roller coaster ride where NFTs were the hottest thing.
Yeah,
and then that roller coaster came way down.
Yes.
Maybe coming a little bit back up again, but you know, it kind of raises the question for me, like, is the, you know, are you attaching yourself to a distribution system that, for all its theoretical promise, the market may not necessarily ever pan out in the way that you think it will?
Yeah.
Absolutely, you know, absolutely. You're right. I think there's it's almost an image. It's an image makeover, I think, in general, that, like, NFTs and Web3s need, partly because I think the associations and you know, like, I, you know, I'll say, like, this is not just a Web3 thing. This is, like, you know, we saw certainly what happened with FTX, but, you know, there's a banking, you know, SVB was a different, that's separate from Web, you know, parts of it separate from Web3. So there are things that just happen where you have bad actors in general, right? Like, you look through the history of anything and you're always going to have bad actors. Web3 is no different. Like, there are bad actors clearly, you know, cast a little bit of a, you know, certainly a haze on the potential. But I think what people, and this is what we're trying to do, because I think, you know, because we are, you know, we're committed to Web3, we're committed to, you know, AI technology. And for us, we believe in it and we believe in its potential. So, and because we are, you know, hopefully trailblazing and pioneering some cool new stuff, then it's incumbent on us to help educate and sort of carry messages like, what does this really mean? And I think the challenge for Web3 today is that, you know, people don't know what it really means, or they've gotten caught up in like, oh, it's an asset that I flip, and it's, you know, it's all about like speculation. And they don't understand the utility of what Web3 is and how Web3 really can sort of elevate storytelling, building characters, community experiences, all those things. And that is real. That's real potential for Web3. But, you know, I don't think anybody really understands that. And I think the problem is we're also getting caught up in like terms, and we're talking about it too technically. And it's like, put all that stuff aside. Like, let's just talk about it. And like, you know, and again, like Louisa and myself, our background, you know, is entertainment. It is working at, you know, studios, and we've been fortunate to work on some, you know, giant, you know, franchise IP. It's about the story. It's about the characters. It's about the creators, the people behind it. Make it about that, and then have Web3 be, you know, sort of the backbone to this. And that shouldn't be the headline, but it should be there. And if you lean into it, it's going to create all sorts of possibilities. But I don't think that should be the focus of the narrative, because it's just, you know, it's I think it's overcomplicating things.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like the thing that just, you know, we said, don't talk about the technical. I'm going to talk about the technical for a minute. I'm going to talk about the technical for a minute. There's NFTs, and then there's Web3, right? So you have, like, we're excited by the Web3, you know, technology and infrastructure and what it's going to do for distribution, for, you know, for production, for, you know, story creation. Because at the end of the day, like, I guess, you know, like, I'll give an analogy, like, when you have, or an example, not an analogy, but like, if you are a fan base of like anything that's out there, like, you know, usually like these big projects, they usually have like, oh, these like fan experiences that they create. And it's usually like, you know, an agency creates a fan experience and it's great. And people are like, oh, this is so exciting, so fun. And then when, you know, kind of like the movie inherently sort of like, you know, goes out of theaters and, you know, moves into different cycles of that, you know, what happens to that fan experience? Because that's usually being run by an agency that's been tasked to create this sort of like, you know, other experience to go along in the companion of the release of the movie. Well, you know, the studio stops paying the bills, and then the agency is like, okay, cool, well, we're done with that experience. And then it's probably either shut down or they just kind of like leave it there, and it's in some like digital wasteland. And as a fan, what happens? It's like, well, if I like really love this experience and I've like invested time in, let's say, the story creation, you know, our story creation portal was part of that experience. Well, if the agency shuts down or stops, you know, managing it, it basically just kind of sits there and flounders. And I'm like, as a fan, well, what if I spent 5, 10, 20, 100 hours creating this and I really loved it, and all of a sudden it's like, wait, it amounted to nothing. And to us, it's like, we also have to really kind of think about our responsibility to what fans invest in the experience. Because even if they don't give you a ton of money, the thing that they're also giving you is a lot of time and attention. And that is what Web3 is going to inherently change about that, is like, that in the Web3 ecosystem won't go away, can't go away because of smart contracts. So even if somebody's like, okay, I'm not actively administrating anymore, you don't need someone actively administrating it, because it is now powered by a smart contract and it will not go away. It's just it's forever locked and automated, so that if a fan wants to forever have that experience, they can. And that's the beauty of it, is like, it's like, as long as there's a fandom around it, it will self-perpetuate and it won't go away. It's not like this marketing vehicle that then all of a sudden, like, oh, bills stop. Well, okay, no, now it's digital wasteland.
So I want to get a sense of what your long-term vision is here for not just your company, but for Web3 Entertainment. So in other words, are you guys counting on a world where Web3 takes over and the old distribution models crumble? Or Web3 will just be sitting there alongside everyone else and it'll be one other thing you do? How much Kool-Aid am I drinking here? Let's get with that.
What's the level of right?
It's not it's never going to be something that's going to it's not about like destroying like old institutions, right? It's always going to be this it's additive. Right?
Yeah. I think it's complementary. I mean, we're seeing it as a springboard, for original ideas, for new diverse creators, also for creators that have had success in traditional, that want to do something original. Because I think that's the other part is your earlier question of why are we able to sort of work with some of the amazing creators and talent that we are. I think another reason is there is prequel, sequel, reboot fatigue, and again we come from that world and understand why that is happening, but doesn't change the fact that's a state of play. And so if everything's a prequel, sequel, reboot, where do I go with my original idea? And I think that's what we're seeing Web3 as. Here hopefully is the birthplace, the springboard for original ideas, original IP. Again, new diverse storytellers, also, traditional folks that have had a lot of success, and use that as a springboard. To Louisa's point, you get your rabid fans are in there, they're sort of building the IP. And then from there, it's absolutely complementary to why couldn't it then go to a streamer eventually? Why couldn't it, become a film? And I think that traditional system is complementary to Web3. I don't think it's an either or. And I do think future state, you're going to see, much more of a fluid, you're going to see much more of a fluid sort of relationship between, traditional and Web3.
I don't want to skip the fact that another distinction about Space Junk is you are going to have the first character voiced entirely by an AI voice generated software, which sounds great, but what exactly does that mean? Is this character writing its own dialogue or speaking your dialogue that you've written? How does that work?
Yeah. So
I'm sorry, Andy. I'm afraid. I can't do that.
For those who don't know what that reference is.
I had to.
I'm 2001. Sorry, continue, Lisa.
So, the character's name is Welbecca. And so in the show, she is performing the lines that have been written by Dominic Russo. And so in the show itself, she's fully... AI generated voice. There's a distinction. There's, the voice cloning technology where it's based on somebody's performance. And then there's, full AI voice generation. So, kind of literally created in a lab. She's performing the lines and she's an AI actor. So that's her sort of in the show. Now, outside of the show, our social media is actually being run by Welbecca, and the social media posts and the social media interactions that are being had is actually completely generated through AI engines.
And then there's the creative co-pilot.
Yes.
So the other, I think really cool thing about Welbecca is then, those examples are on, sort of on the production side, but then we're also using Welbecca on the community facing side, where she's going to be essentially your creative co-pilot. So if you're in the community and you want to go, write fan fiction for a character or a concept within the Space Junk universe, you're going to go to Welbecca and she's going to help you come up with, you know, fan fiction. So now, you know, again, so she sort of becomes like your, you know, your creative assistant, your creative co-pilot, to help you make things as a community member.
At the risk of falling off the cutting edge here, I have to ask. So we stand now at, you know, the beginning of a whole new era when it comes to AI, generative AI, what it can mean to the creative process. My guess is you guys are thinking a lot about this stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you have at this early sense of the game what you think this will mean for your company or the industry at large?
We're super excited.
Yeah,
yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, so we've been for a long time actually using AI in the production pipeline through machine learning. This is our first foray into a more community facing experience, and then obviously as like a actual performer in a show. The way that we see AI and, you know, kind of everything that we sort of do so far is like AI is a great tool for creators, for, you know, for people in the creative industry, because it's a way to be able to supercharge a lot of like idea creation, being able to help you, you know, generate proof of concepts to just even see like, is this a direction that I want to take with something? So for us, we're super, super excited by now it feels like the ability to, you know, get even more creative and to experiment with things that maybe, you know, might have taken us, you know, weeks can be synthesized in days. And we're excited by, you know, you take creators, it's like, hey, creators have like so many ideas that all of a sudden they can sort of say, hey, like, what does this idea look like? Like, please synthesize it for me. And now what AI does is like it helps you kind of get like 50, 60, 70% there. Yeah. It's never going to be able to, you know, like we've all seen the headlines, right? It's like, oh, it's going to write the next, you know, Succession. It's not. Yeah. It's not.
But I think that is the misconception, because it's not like, listen, AI is not a button you hit and out pops Harry Potter. Like that's not, you know, that's not how it works. But it is this like, it really is this like great tool, assistant, you know, creative co-pilot. I think that is a good sort of like way to think about it, that does supercharge you as a creator. And when you see what comes out, It can do a good portion of the heavy lifting. And, you know, to Luis's point, maybe get you 40, 50, 60% there. But then the rest, you know, if you really want quality output, something that fans are going to like love and, you know, like, and want to interact with, you're going to have to lean in and do that. Like, that's the human element. Mm-hmm. But it is, you know, a combination of both. It does, like, and to Luis's point also, like, we've been using it on the production side for years. And there are some, it's been really helpful. And I think that, you know, I think longer term, it is going to create new opportunities. Now, I think there's also part of where people are going to have to rethink what they do. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be transformation. There's going to be transition. There's no doubt. Mm-hmm. But I think longer term, there are going to be new sort of like opportunities that are created by this. But it's just going to be a matter of like thinking about things differently. And I think the hope is like it's going to free up people to be more creative, like spend your time on things that are you know, like original artistry or like pure creation. And that's where hopefully people can spend their time and, you know, spend more of their work on those kind of activities.
Well, there's a lot of, quite a ferment on the innovative side of Hollywood these days. And you guys are clearly playing in this playground. Space Junk starts May 19th. If you want to check out the future of entertainment, get in early, get an NFT. Thank you, John and Louisa, for coming in today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having us.
This has been another episode of Strictly Business. Tune in next week for another helping of scintillating conversation with media movers and shakers. And please make sure you subscribe to the podcast to hear future episodes. Also, leave a review in Apple Podcasts and let us know how we're doing.
refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.